Let me tell you a couple of true stories that I believe illustrate the prevailing wisdom of our world with regards to work. I have a friend who works as a doctor, and her flatmate is studying to be a nurse. She shared with me the other day how awkward she finds the situation when together they meet someone else for the first time. She said the conversation often runs something like this. "So what do you do?" "I'm a nursing student." Oh, that's good." And to my friend, "And what do you do?" "I'm a doctor." "Really? That is so interesting. You must really enjoy your work. I bet you know everything about..." And on it goes. Or another friend of mine. She's a qualified, experienced health professional. But for the last few years, she's chosen to be a full-time mum, staying at home to look after her young children. Now, for a while, nobody commented on that decision. But in the last 12 months, friends, even Christian friends, have asked her, "So when are you thinking of going back to work?" She wouldn't really have any trouble getting a job. So what's her problem? There's a widespread wisdom in our community that you are what you do. And certain kinds of work and a certain level of income makes you a somebody in our world's eyes. And certain kinds of work you really wouldn't want to admit that you do unless you have to. When the surveys are done, the hierarchy is fairly consistent. Judges and specialist doctors come out at the top of the pile. Used car salesmen and real estate agents are at the bottom. Those who are unemployed or who don't work for money are in a different non-person category altogether. Well, here's another issue. How many of you remember the Paxtons? They were a family from Melbourne who were exposed a couple of years ago as the biggest pack of bludgers in Australia. They made the news. The current affairs programs huffed and puffed about them for a while. The whole family had perfected the art of living off Social Security. They had quite a nice life. They had no intention of looking for a job, and they couldn't understand what all the fuss was about. And a section of Australian society, perhaps a little part of most of us, hailed the Paxtons as folk heroes. Because the smoko, the knocking off early, the long weekend, the early retirement, it's all very Australian. On the other hand, some people in our society seem to be happy doing nothing but work. Last week I saw the movie A Beautiful Mind. The main character, John Nash, suffers a mental breakdown. Now, before, he worked at a prestigious research institute, but he loses his job. And there's a telling scene where a former colleague comes to visit John in his home. He sees his wife and his son, and he says, "Come on, John, there's more to life than work." At which point John replies, "Yeah? What is it?" Especially for men, our purpose, our meaning in life so often lies in our work, and we're driven to work harder and harder to achieve the success, the security, the respect that we're looking for. From laziness to workaholism, our world is divided on where wisdom lies with work, but it's often at one extreme or the other. This morning we've come to sit at the feet of King Solomon, the great wise man in the Old Testament, to learn from him wisdom about work. Here is God's wisdom that he gave to Solomon that we might know how to live well in this world. But come with me first to Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. This is a really important starting point. Proverbs 9, verse 10. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." So the fear of Yahweh, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, is the beginning of wisdom. A right relationship with God is the entry point to wise living. I could say it negatively. You will not understand these words of wisdom. They will not sound like wisdom to you until you humble yourself before the true and living God. Now, some of what we read together this morning might sound to you like great foolishness. If it does, it might be because you don't yet know God. Now, of course, it might sound foolish because I make a complete botch of teaching it to you. But it might be more serious. Now, we're thinking about God's way to live on the issue of work this morning. And if it sounds bizarre to you, it might be because you're not yet God's person. Now, that's really important to get sorted out. And myself, Dave, others here would love to talk with you about that. But right now, Solomon is talking to the insiders, if you like, those who are already following the Lord, about how to live well. So we begin then with two assumptions that lie behind all Solomon has to say here, both of them drawn from the opening chapters of the Bible. First, work is good and part of what it means to be human. Genesis chapter 1 shows us that God himself is a worker. He works 6 days and rests on the seventh day. He's very different to, say, the Greek gods in this respect, who are really into idleness and frivolity. When God creates mankind in his image, part of our mandate is to rule and subdue the earth. Adam is to tend the Garden of Eden and take care of it. He's given work to do as part of God's good order. The Greeks were wrong. The Paxtons are wrong. Work is good and part of what it means to be human. Secondly, Solomon assumes that work in this world will be frustrating, be toil. Mankind is no longer in the Garden of Eden. And because of their rebellion against God, our first parents were cast out. The very ground itself was cursed by God. Adam's work was characterized by pain and sweat and eventually death. Mankind is now unable to rule and subdue the earth as God has commanded us. We will be forever frustrated in our work. And so patients keep on getting sick. The bridges slowly rust away. Communications are difficult in our business dealings. Every area of life and work is profoundly affected by God's judgment on our world. So work is good. Work is frustrating in this world. These are the two assumptions that lie behind Solomon's words. So given these two things, what is wisdom about work? Firstly, Solomon helps us with the question, why work? It's fairly straightforward. According to Solomon, we work in order to provide basic necessities for ourselves and for our household. Proverbs 16, verse 26. We're going to do a bit of flipping around in the book of Proverbs. I'll give you time to keep up. Proverbs 16, 26. The labourer's appetite works for him. His hunger drives him on. Or Proverbs 27, 23. Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds, for riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. When the hay is removed and new growth appears and the grass from the hills is gathered in, the lambs will provide you with clothing and the goats with the price of a field. You will have plenty of goat's milk to feed you and your family and to nourish your servant girls. The noble wife in Proverbs 31, as we heard earlier, works hard to provide food and clothing for her family and even to have something to share with the poor and the needy. We as humans in this world need food and clothing and shelter to live and flourish. And providing these things for ourselves, for our loved ones and even beyond that, is a wise reason to work. But notice what is absent from Solomon's wisdom. We do not work in order to be fulfilled as people, or to have a bigger house than our next door neighbour, or so that we will be respected by our peers. We work to eat and to have something to share with others. Secondly, Solomon gives us a lot of wisdom about how to work. And based on the sheer number of Proverbs, this is what he seems to be most concerned about. There are two main virtues that he holds out for us in how to work: diligence and integrity. Diligence is careful, thorough application to the job at hand. It is faithfulness in work, day in, day out. So here's a couple of samples. Proverbs 12, 24. Diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in slave labour. Or Proverbs 10, verse 5. He who gathers crops in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. The contrast to the diligent worker is the sluggard. What a great word that is. The slacker, the layabout. And Solomon has nothing good to say about the sluggard. Come over to Proverbs 24, verse 30. I went past the field of the sluggard, past the vineyard of the man who lacks judgment. Thorns had come up everywhere. The ground was covered with weeds and the stone wall was in ruins. I applied my heart to what I observed and learned a lesson from what I saw. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. The curse that God has placed this world under means that we will be constantly fighting the battle against the weeds and the thorns and even the decaying stone wall. What is called for in this world, therefore, is diligence in our work. That is wisdom. Now, there are many more observations that flow out of this basic idea of diligence that I won't chase through now, like the foolishness of chasing fantasies or get-rich-quick schemes. Proverbs 12, 13 and 13, 11, if you want to look them up later. Or the respect shown to a skillful worker. Proverbs 22, 29. So that's one whole area of wisdom in work, is diligence. The second main virtue, thinking about how to work, is with integrity or righteousness. Proverbs 10, verse 16. The wages of the righteous bring them life, but the income of the wicked brings them punishment. Or Proverbs 20, verse 17. Food gained by fraud tastes sweet to a man, but he ends up with a mouth full of gravel. The idea behind these words, integrity, righteousness, is the same. It's conforming to some objective standard or measure. So a doctor acts with integrity when he or she consistently practices medicine within the AMA ethical guidelines, or the Hippocratic Oath, or something similar. In Proverbs, remember that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so integrity here is acting in accordance with God's ethical guidelines. Being honest, Proverbs 11 verse 1. The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. Proverbs 21 verse 6. A fortune made by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapour and a deadly snare. Not acting out of greed. Proverbs 15, 27. A greedy man brings trouble to his family, but he who hates bribes will live. Proverbs 22, verse 16. Not abusing others who are less well off. Proverbs 22, 16. He who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth, and he who gives gifts to the rich, both come to poverty. Now, it doesn't matter what work you find yourself doing, there will be opportunities to make a quick buck by doing the wrong thing. Telling lies, cutting corners, intimidating the defenceless. It is not God's way, and it is not wise. couple of years ago, we rented a flat in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, and within a few months of us moving in, the paint in the bathroom was peeling off all over the place. We told the real estate agents. They said that we were one of many who'd complained about the work of a particular painter. They'd used him for a while, and he had saved time and effort by not preparing his surfaces properly. Now, by the time we'd complained, he'd moved on. He was working in another suburb. They wouldn't use him again. And one day his lack of integrity will catch up with him. Perhaps today, tonight, might feature him in a story one day. I can only hope. So how should we work? With diligence and integrity. And there are a number of other virtues that Solomon mentions in just a minor way. I won't spend a lot of time on them now, but later you might like to look up, for example, the value of humility in work in Proverbs 25, verse 6. Or the value of minding your own business in work, Proverbs 26, verse 17. Or the value of avoiding gossip and slander in your workplace. Proverbs 30, verse 10. God is very interested in the way that we go about what work it is that we do. Well, what about the question of which work to do? Does Solomon have any wisdom for us about which work is most worth doing? Surprisingly for many, Proverbs is almost completely silent on this issue. There are many proverbs about farming, about commercial trading ventures. There are special words for kings and those in authority, and some for slaves. But there's no advice on which is better or worse. Now, perhaps this is because people living at the time had very little choice of what work they did. If their father was a farmer, well, they worked on the farm. If they were born a prince, well, they learned to govern. Which work is a stupid question, really, for most of the world's population. It's only the filthy rich and the educated who worry about such a question. But perhaps there is nothing said in Proverbs because it genuinely doesn't matter to God what work we do. There are some occupations that are ruled out right away because they fail the integrity test. The thief, the prostitute, the bookmaker. The wise person can never do these kind of jobs. But in most jobs, it is possible to provide for ourselves and our families. In most jobs, there are opportunities to work with integrity and diligence and humility and so on. In God's eyes, the important thing about work is not what we do, but that we do it for the right reasons and in the right way. Now, just before we leave Solomon, I'm going to cheat a bit and go outside Proverbs to that reading we had from the book of Ecclesiastes, because there is another very important piece of wisdom about work that Solomon wants us to know. That is, work in this world is ultimately meaningless. It's a pretty important bit of information, isn't it? Because from all we've seen so far, we could leave with the mistaken idea that so long as we do our work with integrity and diligence and all the rest, we could actually achieve something significant in our work. Not so, according to Solomon. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 17. So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. To be sure, down in verse 24, a man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. There are temporary pleasures in work and the food that we earn from the work that we do. But there is one great reality that makes all of this ultimately meaningless. Death. No matter how hard we work, no matter how skillful we may be, in the end we're all a food for the maggots. And we have to leave everything we've worked so hard for to somebody else. Verse 19, who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the work into which I've poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. There is no gain, ultimately, from all our labour at which we toil under the sun. We need both Proverbs and Ecclesiastes if we're going to live wisely in our work. There is value in working with diligence and integrity to provide for ourselves and others. But our work cannot bring ultimate meaning to our lives. We can't, by our work, reverse the curse that has come upon our world and upon us as fallen beings. Something other than our work is required to do that. And so we come, finally, to the wisdom of Jesus and to his work. Now, Jesus was most probably a carpenter. We know he was a carpenter's son, so most likely he was too. And I'm sure that as the wisest man that ever lived, Jesus practiced his trade diligently, with integrity and humility and generosity and so on. But the gospel writers are almost completely uninterested in Jesus' carpentry. It is another kind of work that they are interested in. Come with me to John chapter 4. Jesus came into this broken and frustrated world. He ruled over the wind and the waves. The demons bowed before him. Disease, even death, was reversed by him. And in John's gospel, Jesus comes doing the work of the Father. John chapter 4, verse 34. My food, Jesus says, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Now we know from this gospel that Jesus is talking about God's work of judgment and salvation. God has not just let this world to go to seed. He's actively set about re-establishing the good order in his universe and bringing rebellious mankind back into right relationship with himself. In Jesus, and climactically in Jesus' death and resurrection, the work of God is finished. On the cross, Jesus can cry out, "It is finished." Because of Jesus' death, we guilty sinners can be forgiven and come back to God. Jesus has done the work. He's opened up this pathway back into true God-shaped life, back to God's rest, as the Bible calls it. Jesus' work was the work of redemption. And especially in his resurrection, his work ushers in the certainty of a whole new creation. Jesus is the first fruits of a whole family of resurrected people. And even more than that, the whole universe is going to be renovated or renewed to accommodate our glorious bodies. Suddenly, because of Jesus' work, death is not the end. And life has meaning again. And in the light of all that, what is God's work for us? The reading we had from John chapter 6, verse 28. The crowd asked Jesus, "What must we do to do the works God requires?" Jesus answered, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent." In other words, our work is to trust Jesus. That's a bizarre statement in some ways. Jesus is saying, your work is to do nothing. Your work is to rest, 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 is rest, is to 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 rest.